From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto gave voice yesterday to the pain coursing through his city as it struggles with the loss of 11 beloved residents and the wounding of six others, including four police officers, all shot by a gunman at Tree of Life Synagogue on Saturday morning.
We will work together as one. We will defeat hate with love. We will be a city of compassion, welcoming to all people, no matter what your religion or where your family came from on this earth or your status.
There is a broader question for the rest of us. What will we do as neighbors, as a nation, to confront burgeoning hatred in America? Rabbi Jeffrey Myers, who was leading a service at Tree of Life Synagogue when the shooting occurred, told NBC Today that it cannot be ignored.
There is hate, and it isn't going away. It just seems to be getting worse.
This hour on Point, Pittsburgh, rising anti-Semitism, and fighting back against all manner of hate in America. And you can join us. How are you or your community responding to what happened in Pittsburgh? Does it seem like part of a larger pattern of growing hate in this country, or as one writer put it recently, of America's burgeoning ecosystem of hate? And what do we do to battle back against it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Well, we'll start today in Pittsburgh with David Shribman. He's executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We have a link to his recent piece. He just wrote it this weekend. It's titled Dispatch from Squirrel Hill, Dread in a Peaceful Place. That link is at onpointradio.org. David Shribman, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thank you so much. Tough time, but thank you.
I am so sorry. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, but these are terrible circumstances. I mean, first of all, how are you doing and how's Pittsburgh doing?
Well, you know, I live three blocks from there. It's very, very hard. We as journalists serve our community by doing our work. So we're doing our work and we're tired, but it's the fatigue of service. And you know, that sounds a little melodramatic, but this is a dramatic moment for us.
Well, as you walked around your neighborhood where Tree of Life is over the course of the weekend, what's it like?
It's quiet. It wasn't quiet, 48 hours ago at this very hour, actually. It's quiet. It's solemn. The Steelers played the Browns yesterday. Big rivalry. We don't like those guys up there. It's just the way it is, and that game lost a lot of its urgency. Mm. Nobody in Squirrel Hill paid much mind.
Yeah. You know, you wrote this weekend about how there was a thought in the back of many people's mind that the unthinkable, which has happened in many other American communities, at many other places of worship, many other houses of worship, that, you know, it could eventually happen in Squirrel Hill, and it did. It was only 48 hours ago. I mean, you said you started getting texts and phone calls. I mean, what happened in those first initial moments?
Well, I was actually at the gym, and one of my workout mates, who was actually at home trying to buy his wife a muffin at the bakery right around the corner from Tree of Life. Yeah, the line was too long, so Sissy Lieberman didn't get her muffin, and he headed home, and at that moment, he saw the whole thing, and he called me, as I have all of my friends trained. He called me, and I got off the bike and went home. Hmm. And then to work, of course, I must say. Yeah.
So how... tell us a little bit more about Squirrel Hill as a neighborhood and as a center of Jewish life in America.
Well, your next guest, Howard Feynman, yeah, grew up there, and he'll provide the Squirrel Hill of his youth. The Squirrel Hill of my time, I've lived there 16 years, is slightly different from Howard's, and in that it's a little less Jewish. It's now about 45% Jewish. I think in Howard's time it might have been a little more. Howard and my daughter both went to Taylor Alderdice High School, where there wasn't much learning going on the high holidays. People in our neighborhood think it unremarkable to see streams and parades of men and women going to temple on Friday night in the garb of the Orthodox. They mix easily with the more secular Jews and the non-Jews, of course. It's a neighborhood where the jeweler is closed on Saturday but open on Sunday, where the Dunkin' Donuts and the ice cream shop are inspected monthly by rabbis. They're probably the only kosher Dunkin' Donuts in North America. And so it's that kind of place. And it's a place of surpassing servility. I don't mean servility. I mean civility. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful place to live. And Howard will tell you about what it was like to grow up there. But I know to have moved there as an adult with a family, two daughters and a wife, it was a wonderful place to bring our daughters up. And although our daughters were born in Washington, they identify themselves as Pittsburghers. We got the most remarkable text from Elizabeth Shribman, who works for the San Francisco Symphony in San Francisco. And she sent me a text that said it all in about six words, although in our family we know how to say it all. And she said, "Sleeping in my Pittsburgh shirt tonight."
Well, David Tribman is executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And David, stand by here because you did mention rightly that Howard Fineman is also with us now. He's joining us today from Washington. He's NBC News analyst and journalism lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania, former global editor at the Huffington Post. And he did grow up in Pittsburgh and was a member of Tree of Life Synagogue. Howard Fineman, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So tell us, first of all, how you're doing today. And as David was saying about Squirrel Hill as a center of American Judaism.
Well, David is literally at ground zero. I'm at ground zero mentally. And it's difficult. I don't think I've processed it yet personally. As David says, the first reaction of a journalist, and I've been one even longer than David. We've both been in the business forever. Your first reaction is to report what you know, add to the story, give people perspective. So that's what I've been doing from here. It's agonizing in a way not to be in Pittsburgh, but on the other hand, my job as a national reporter is to try to see this in the context of America. And also from my own youth, as David said, I was born in Pittsburgh. I was reared in Squirrel Hill. I've got to say that there may have been a better place to grow up in America in the 50s and 60s, but I don't know what that would be. Squirrel Hill was the perfect combination of Jewish identity, as David was describing, but also utterly American in every sense. And for me, it stitched me into both identities simultaneously in a way that I treasure and that I worry is now under threat,
frankly. You wrote that you feel like a certain naivete that you had about America is falling away now.
Yeah, I wrote a piece for the New York Times about that to try to put it in the political context that I've been covering all my life. The big story as a political reporter, first in Louisville and then at Newsweek and then for HuffPost and all through that for NBC, has been the rise of the conservative movement in America, which has had added many useful and beneficial things to our national conversation. And that, in the course of my reporting in Kentucky and around the country, has led me most recently to a lot of rallies, Donald Trump rallies around the country in 2015 and 2016. And I persisted in viewing that as a useful sort of swinging of the pendulum, natural swinging of the pendulum of American politics. It's been my theory all my life as a reporter, and I would say personally, that we are contentious people, that we're supposed to be contentious, that that's what makes us who we are, that's what drives us forward. And that's all to the good, and I've been covering it as a sort of contrapuntal pageant of conversation. What I fear now and what I've seen grow over the last few years and what comes home to me with brutal urgency is the question of whether that pendulum is swinging too wildly and swinging out of control. And if you hear a quavering in my voice, that's the reason why.
Well, yesterday, at an evening vigil held in Pittsburgh. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers, he directly linked what happened at Tree of Life with the rhetoric of U.S. politicians. I mean, he said, it starts with speech. It has to start with you as our leaders. My words are not intended as political fodder. I address all equally. Stop the words of hate. David Shribman, do you think... I already know some people listening to this are going to call in and push back against that, saying that you can't draw a straight line. But I don't necessarily... I don't think even Rabbi Myers is drawing a straight line here. There is a complex web of forces that have led us to this moment. But what's your reaction to hearing the rabbi say that on Sunday?
Well, you know, we all feel that this needs to stop. It needs to stop right at this moment. It needs to stop at the corner of Wilkins Avenue and Shady Avenue, which is where this tragedy occurred and where Howard, as a child, used to walk. It needs to stop right there. It's easy to say that, sitting in comfort in a studio in Pittsburgh, and I say it needs to stop, and a lot of people are listening, and no one will pay any attention. I don't know how it stops, but it needs to stop. And we need to be civil to each other. There's a great irony and a great opportunity that this happened in Squirrel Hill, where civility reigns.
Well, we'll be back in just a moment. We're speaking with David Shribman. He's executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're also talking with Howard Fineman. He's NBC News analyst and journalism lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. He grew up in Pittsburgh and was a member of the Tree of Life Synagogue. And we're talking about the massacre that happened at that synagogue on Saturday. We're talking about rising anti-Semitism and hate of all kinds in America and what to do about it. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Pittsburgh, about the massacre that took place on Saturday at Tree of Life Synagogue there, and about America's burgeoning ecosystem of hate. And I'm borrowing that phrase from Jill Filipovich, who tweeted out about that. She's a writer and attorney over the weekend. And my question is, what to do about this broader ecosystem of hate that has been emboldened and even legitimized in America in 2018. Let's listen to how President Donald Trump himself reacted to what happened in Pittsburgh. During a Saturday evening rally in Murfreesboro, Illinois, the president began his speech addressing the shooting.
This wicked act of mass murder is pure evil, hard to believe, and frankly, something that is unimaginable.
President Donald Trump on Saturday evening in Illinois. I'm joined today by David Shribman. He's executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Also by Howard Fineman. He's NBC News analyst and journalism lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. And joining us now is Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg. She is a rabbi in residence at Avoda, an organization that trains Jewish social justice leaders. Her opinion piece for The Washington Post is headlined, "The Victims of the Tree of Life Synagogue Massacre Are Martyrs." We have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Rabbi Ruttenberg, welcome to the program.
Hi, Meghna.
So your first thoughts today on how we should be looking at and thinking about what happened on Saturday at Tree of Life.
We need to be seeing it in context. When Trump is saying, this is so hard to believe, I think this is absolutely it's devastating, but it's absolutely conceivable given the context of anti-Semitism historically and on the rise in America, given the context of our lack of protections for gun violence, given the context of ongoing increasing hate crimes in America and the rise of white supremacy. This absolutely is it fits in a lot of contexts, and I argued in the piece that it also sits in the context, unfortunately, of our history of martyrs in Judaism.
Mm. I should note here that we've got a couple of comments that have come in online. Nancy Banks tells us on Facebook that while I do not in any way wish to diminish the horror of the killings in Pittsburgh, two black men were also murdered last week, possibly a hate crime, a lot of hate for one week. And in fact, to Nancy's point, that shooter was who gunned down those two black men in Kentucky said that whites don't kill, allegedly said whites don't kill whites. And we also have, you know, we're not even a couple of weeks off the pipe bombs that were sent to various political leaders around the country as well. So that's why I'm trying to, I want to talk specifically about rising anti-Semitism, but also in this broader context of, as I keep calling it, this ecosystem of hate here. But Rabbi Ruttenberg, tell me a little bit more about, you know, how it is that we should look to, or what exactly you see in American political leadership right now that maybe stoking all of this?
There is a tremendous amount stoking it. We have a white supremacist administration, and Trump has been himself attacking George Soros for a long, long time. He's been using, even after the Tree of Life shooting, he's been making use of the word globalist, which he does very, very often. Both of these are new contemporary anti-Semitic dog whistles. The idea that there is a Jew who is powerful and on front and secretly, you know, funding infiltrations is a very, very, very ancient idea. But it's manifesting now in a myriad of ways.
Mm. Well, I mean, Howard Fineman, let's talk a little bit more about the specific things that that the shooter in Pittsburgh was really ranting and railing about online. I mean, you know, he talked a lot about his hatred of the Jewish Refugee Relief Organization, HIAS, right? That originally began more than a century ago as an organization to aid Jewish refugees around the country, but now is a leading organization in the United States helping refugees from all walks of life. And that, you know, he believed that they were encouraging an infestation in the United States, and that's one of the reasons why he wanted to, well, he murdered people in order to end the assistance to refugees. I mean, talk, and that there was a conspiracy behind that as well. So, Howard, just talk to me more about how all those threads come together.
Well, this isn't a story just about the Jews or just about the Tree of Life synagogue where I basically grew up. If you know history, you know that in a way the Jews are the canaries in the coal mine of social and political disarray and breakdown, and I think you need to look at it in that context. The first thing I thought of yesterday morning was the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, right, where a quite similar thing happened, attacking worshipers, in this case in a church, fed by a lot of the same paranoia and anger and conspiracy thinking. Then that's how I look at it. Over the course of history, conspiracy theories about the Jews have been a convenient and deadly easy answer for people who are disengaged and angry at the system. It's been true for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And here in America, it is part of a medley of hate that we're seeing across the spectrum. We're seeing racially motivated paranoia. We're seeing religiously motivated paranoia. We're seeing politically motivated paranoia. And the language has gotten harsh on all sides. I mean, conservatives will tell you, and I think they're right, some of the language that that Democrats have used have leaned toward the idea that everything is a fight, that everybody is who is a political opponent is somehow not quite human. What the point we've reached here And there are a lot of reasons for it. There are lots and lots of reasons for it, is that anybody we disagree with politically is subhuman, is not quite human, is an other with a capital O that is dangerous and incomprehensible and out to destroy society. It seems like the connective tissue of our culture has gone missing. And I think the founders, when they set up our system, wanted contention, but they relied on the idea that there would be character in the people, that there would be communities where people would know each other and thus understand each other's humanity, even if they disagreed with them politically. And that's kind of disappeared. And that kind of hollowing out of our civic culture is what's allowed this to happen. It's what's allowed the shooting in Charleston to happen. It's what's allowed people to send pipe bombs to Democratic leaders. It's what led Mr. Bowers to say, "I'm going in," mm-hmm. and head into a building that I know all too well, where my parents both taught Sunday school, where I was bar mitzvahed, The scenes of mayhem there are just beyond imagining. But it's all part of this larger context of the hollowing out of our civic life.
Can I disagree with that?
Go ahead, Rabbi.
I think this both sides rhetoric is not helpful in this moment. And I think it obfuscates the context in which a group of people have power and are stoking hate and are fostering dehumanizing language and are separating families, putting children in cages, creating Muslim bans, removing transgender folks' access to legal protection in ways that are real and impactful on people's lives. I think it obfuscates, pardon my stumbling here, the history of slavery and of Native American genocide and of discrimination against people of color throughout America's history. There is absolutely a rise in white supremacist language. The NAACP noted that there are, over the last 4 years, there's been a steady rise in hate crimes that we've now hit the highest point in over 10 years. The ADL noted that there's a rise in hate speech mm-hmm. and anti-Semitism online. There is definitely a move towards dehumanization that is making possible these moments, and I absolutely agree that this shooting is of a piece with the shooting in Charleston and with the attack on the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, all the way back to and beyond the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama. This is part of a pattern of white supremacist attacks on people who are not, who are minorities, on people of color, on people who are vulnerable, and those in power now are using their power to foment it. I think both sides' rhetoric is not helpful in this moment.
Well, I want to get to some callers here, but Howard Fineman, just let me give you a chance to respond to Rabbi Rettenberg.
Well, we don't really disagree. Because what I'm saying is that the Jews have been a marker. The history of the Jews, you know, right up through Tree of Life, is it's our fate to be a marker and victims of intolerance. And we're not really disagreeing. I think that it's a societal problem that is dramatized now for those in the Jewish community and for all the world to see. And in a peaceful place like Squirrel Hill, where this unimaginably happened, that's just evidence of where we're at.
Mm. And if I could add one thing before you...
Go ahead, David.
Rabbi, the reason you know those things is that we reported them. That's our role here.
Mm-hmm.
We've reported them, and we're proud to have done our duty here. So that's our role in this community and in the country.
Well, let's go to a call here. Aaron is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello. The latest theme in the popular press and in your introduction as well has been America's culture of hate. when it should be Donald Trump's nation of hate. You know, I don't know why the popular press, and that includes NPR, refused to call Donald Trump a pathological bigot. The president, in his verbatim words, encourages violence, and not only against minorities, but against you, the popular press. And I don't know what the press is afraid of. I think they're partially at fault for this violence.
Aaron, thank you for your call. Actually, David Shribman, would you like to respond to Aaron?
Well, I think my response to Aaron would be much like the response to the rabbi, is that you know these things because we've reported them.
Yeah. Let's take another call, different point of view here. Shalom is calling from Cleveland, Ohio. You're on the air, Shalom.
I'm an observant Jew. I'm an ardent Trump supporter. And the comments that this rabbi is making, I think it should be obvious. She's not a rabbi of Judaism. She's a rabbi of left-wing ideology. Because the notion to suggest the white supremacy in the White House, I mean, Donald Trump has Orthodox Jewish grandchildren. He allowed his daughter to convert and marry a Jewish guy. And let me tell you something. I don't consider globalism a dog whistle of anti-Semitism. How pathetic. George Soros is a betrayer of his own people. I mean, he talked lovingly about the days when he was a child confiscating Jewish property from Jewish citizens in Nazi-occupied Budapest. So let's knock it off already with this nonsense. I don't know where this rabbi is coming from. Donald Trump has been the best friend the Jewish people have ever had. And I want to add one other thing. His comments, he said early in the morning after the shootings happened, about the lack of security at the synagogue, he's absolutely right. I support that comment 100%.
Shalom, can I just ask you a quick question? Can I just ask you a couple quick questions? One is, four police officers were also shot and wounded, and they are presumably the best trained people with weapons that, you know, in the United States are law enforcement officers, and yet they too were shot and wounded by this gunman. So honestly, it almost feels like blaming the victim when you say things could have been better if they had had an armed guard at the synagogue.
You know that a number of years ago, an anti-Semite, a radical supremacist hater, Jewish hater, went into the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. with every intention of shooting the place up. But the place had proper security. The security guard stopped him right at the front entrance and took him out before he was able to create more carnage. Okay, so there is an example of where an armed security guard took correct action and prevented what happened in Pittsburgh. So Jewish people need to wake up. Anti-Semitism has been around ever since Jews have been around and will continue to be around.
Shalom, can I just ask you one more?
I'm
going to just ask Shalom one more quick question, because you said that, Shalom, you said that you believe that President Trump is the best friend the Jewish people have ever had. But when in Charlottesville, white supremacists marched in Charlottesville chanting, "Jews will not replace us," and the president refused to condemn them, said there were good people on both sides. He can have family members who are observant Orthodox Jews, but how is that being a friend to the Jewish people?
To use the word obfuscate, okay, Donald Trump never, ever supported or condoned those racist haters. The question on the table was, should a statue of Robert E. Lee stand or not? And to that question, Donald Trump said there are good sides on both good people on both sides of that issue. I happen to be, you can call me a Northerner or a Yankee if you want to call me that, and I'm not offended by the Robert E. Lee statue. You can call me a good person who doesn't call for taking down the statue. That is the specific point which Donald Trump was addressing. He said the good people on both sides of the issue, whether or not the statue stand. He was not referring to the hate, to the vitriol, and to the killings that took place. John, that was the press completely distorted that issue in order to lay blame and make him look bad. And wherever it happens, it seems like Trump can't win. If a pro-Trumper does something bad, it's Trump's fault. If an anti-Trumper, like in this case, this Mr. Bowers was, it's also Trump's fault. So, hey, you want to have it both ways? How about some consistency over here?
Shalom, thank you for your call. David Shribman, go ahead.
Wait, can I respond?
I wanted to respond before the rabbi responds for this reason. I don't want the rabbi to feel that she is being defensive in her, so let me, and I also don't want her to think I'm rushing to her defense either, but let me just say this. I have a daughter who's 15 months from rabbinical ordination. That led me to understand much more fully the role of a rabbi in a community. And one of the most sacred values we have, the rabbi and Howard will agree, is the free exchange of information and the free exchange of views. And I don't see any reason why the rabbi shouldn't have said what she said.
Yeah. And Rabbi Ruttenberg, I will absolutely let you respond here. Let me just take a quick break so I don't have to cut you off before that. We're speaking with Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, with Howard Fineman, and with David Shribman as well. We're talking about what happened in Pittsburgh at Tree of Life Synagogue and about America's broader ecosystem of hate and what to do about it. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the massacre at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue, about America's rising broader ecosystem of hate and what to do about it. I'm joined today by David Shribman, Howard Fineman, and Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg. And Rabbi Ruttenberg, just before the break, we had that caller, Shalom, who was taking issue with some things that you had said, and I wanted to give you a chance to respond.
So the idea that Trump could not possibly be an anti-Semite because he has a Jewish daughter-in-law, a Jewish daughter and a Jewish son-in-law, is ridiculous. It's like saying that he couldn't possibly be a misogynist because he's had three wives, as somebody observed on Twitter, right? The idea that he's somehow, absolved of his white supremacist stoking, of his blaming the caravan on Soros, of his constant attacks on Soros, calling him up even a few days ago at a rally, that he uses the word globalist again and again and again, but somehow he's auto-magically freed from connection because of his daughter's decisions does not resonate with me. The idea that George Soros is somehow this, was involved in the confiscation of Jewish property is actually a right-wing conspiracy theory that has been debunked, and Soros himself addressed it in an interview. It's not, he was a 14-year-old in Hungary when the Nazis were there. I really do not understand the Jewish Trump mindset. I will say that very clearly. The Torah commands us again and again and again to protect the stranger who is among us, the vulnerable. Right? We are commanded 36 times more than any other mitzvah in the Torah to protect the stranger because we were non-citizen, the immigrant among us. And I take that obligation very seriously. And I know that those who try to paint us as having some sort of secret power operating behind the scenes are just part of a larger white supremacist agenda.
Is that you, Howard? Yeah. Yes. So Howard, can I just? I'm going to turn this to you because, but I also just want to sort of put together some other pieces of this broader puzzle here because I do wonder why we can't or are not just. I take the point that there are lots of bad actors on multiple sides of things, but let us just confront head on this ecosystem that is being, if not burgeoned, at least I don't know, legitimized or not tamped down by Republican leadership in America now.
Can I speak to that? Because I've been covering them for 40 years,
and I've got several examples of even just in the past week. But please, go ahead.
No. I take it through the eyes of Shalom, if I can, for a second, and the notion that Donald Trump is the best friend the Jews ever had is utterly wrong. And here's the reason. for the Jews to live in peace and security in the United States, we need the ideals that the founders put forth and what's best in us to be not only present but evident. And the Jews survive and thrive in places where there is a free exchange of ideas, where everyone is regarded as part of the community and no one is written out of the story on the theory that they're not human. And what Donald Trump has done is that he has taken every thread of discord, cynicism, hatred, and fear that has always been resident in American life, going back to the very beginning. We were talking about slavery, we were talking about the Native Americans, et cetera. He's gathered every one of those bloody threads in his hands and rhetorically used them to get elected and is using them to govern. I don't like the phrase white supremacist just because it sounds like too much rhetoric and propaganda, but the truth is that he rose to power on fear. He rose to power on fear of the other, whether it was in Central Park or on the caravan or anywhere else in American life. He has an unbelievable gift for gathering those threads together and rhetorically using them to gain power. And that is a scenario that is the worst possible scenario for the Jews and indeed for everybody else in this country. And that's the concern.
Right.
And there's no doubt that he's weaponized all these things politically, and that's the moment that we're in.
Right. I mean, so he has, no matter how he chooses to use it, by virtue of being president of the United States, he has the most powerful and perhaps most influential voice here. But if you also look more broadly, I mean, just a couple of examples from the past several months. Earlier this week, before the shooting at Tree of Life, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy put up a tweet warning that three wealthy Jewish Democrats, including George Soros and Michael Bloomberg, were, quote, buying the midterm elections. Now, he deleted that tweet before the shooting on Saturday, but it was up there for a while. People have perhaps heard of the fact that Representative Steve King of Iowa in August, after visiting Auschwitz, gave an interview to a right-wing Austrian party that has historical ties to Nazis, you know, talking about that he was in support of their far-right groups and that emphasizing hardline anti-immigration stances and that the Western civilization's on the decline and that he said if this party were in America pushing the platform they pushed, they would be Republicans. And we also have, for example, Senator Chuck Grassley looking to George Soros and saying he can believe that Soros may have funded the quote-unquote mobs that protested against Judge Kavanaugh. So, like, all of these, or I should say Justice Kavanaugh now, but all of these things together to me seem to be, I don't know, is it just, you know, political cynicism of using these conspiracy theories? Some of it is true belief. But that this is this ecosystem that I'm talking about here that has grown up, and Donald Trump may be an outcome of that ecosystem. And so if that is the case, Howard, let me just turn back to you on this. What do we do about it? I mean, we even have Lou Dobbs on the day of this shooting, on Saturday, running a conversation with Judicial Watch, where the guest says that there's a Soros-occupied State Department.
Yeah, I heard that comment about the Soros-occupied State Department. I think the only answer is leadership. It's voting, as David was saying. People have to get out and express their views and their concerns, as we are designed to do in America, which is through the ballot box next week and in the 2020 election. So voters have to, and individuals has to be individual by individual voting. It also has to be leaders. We have a paradoxical system here in the sense that it's of the people, by the people, for the people. It's from the bottom up, but in order for it to work properly, we need leaders of conscience and character. And I would say the answer, we will hear it when we hear it from somebody, from people who come forward as leaders to explain that America is a community. And we are individuals and we prize individualism in America, but we're also a community and we can't operate without that. So it's going to take leaders to come forward to convince Americans as a whole that there's an answer to using fear and hatred as a way to gain power. There's got to be. That's the only way forward.
Right. Well, Rabbi Ruttenberg and David Tribben, I know you want to get a word in here, but I do have to make some space for our callers who've been patiently waiting. So let me just go briefly to Lois, who's calling from Northampton, Massachusetts. Lois, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Voting, I don't know about leadership, education. To talk of a Jew as a conspirator, as somebody, as a hidden hand, directing things, manipulating things from behind the scenes, this has been a staple. It's absolutely central to modern anti-Semitism since at least the late 19th century. There's absolutely no question when Soros and others are vilified. Secondly, I think the issues of the president having Jewish members of his family or his support for the current government of Israel's policies, those are entirely separate issues from the question of fomenting hate and violence and white supremacy in this country. So let's not confuse them. Mm.
Lois, thank you for your call. David Tribben, you've been listening along. What's your response to Lois?
Well, you know, there's hatred everywhere. There's love everywhere. I don't want to get too syrupy about this. I'm a guy of words. Howard is too. We're both without words right now. We have to do what we have to do. Howard and I are doing our duty, so is the rabbi, by serving our community, by doing our work. I don't have much else to say on that.
Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I just wanted to say that as a college student, I think we should start with younger people. I've taken a class in African-American history as well as Holocaust and Jewish history, and it's an environment where students can ask questions and face stereotypes and discuss it civilly without being filtered or without being...
Ray, you still with us? Looks like we lost Ray's line here. So Rabbi Ruttenberg, let me turn back to you there. It seems as if Ray was trying to say about that we have to somehow create spaces where we can have civil discussions, open people's minds while they're young.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that's not the only place we need to be, but that is absolutely one of the places that we need to be. We need to be focusing on education, both our children and our sort of emerging adults. We need to be helping them to engage and dialogue and go deep. But we also need to be focusing on policies and power. I think it's very, 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 very important to do things in our discourse to have people understand that all of the human beings being discussed in this national conversation are real, live human beings whose value is as profound as your own. That piece has gotten so missing from our national understanding, but we also need to focus on getting people in power who will enact policies who will protect those people. Because sometimes we need to change law and then ideas and public thinking comes after. And if we can have legal protections in place, then those who are in need of them are a lot safer while people are still working on their ideas in their hearts.
Yeah, but the legal protections won't be worth the paper they're written on unless the culture supports it. And I totally agree on education, if I can tell just a quick story.
Sure.
I teach up at Penn on Tuesdays, and I wasn't going to go this week because it's just everything's overwhelming, and I've been trying to do my job, as David says, as a reporter. But I'm also a teacher, and so instead of canceling the class, we're going to do the class tomorrow, it's a journalism class. The course is actually called the Journalism of Social Change, and we've been reading about Black history, and we've been reading about LGBT, and we've been doing all the classic texts and journalism on that. We're going to scrap all that tomorrow, and we're going to talk about this because this is the ultimate teaching moment for those kids. And I want them to evaluate what the role of journalism is in this. And Donald Trump is attacking his main foil right now is the press.
Yeah.
And so we, David and I, in our jobs, have to figure out how to do our job and defend what we do and explain the value of it without being drawn into the idea that we are partisans here. It's very, very difficult. And Donald Trump is a master at making everybody else seem as political and as cynical as he is. We can't be drawn into that, but yet we have to do our jobs.
Well, David Tribman, on Sunday evening, the president tweeted, "The fake news is doing everything in their power to blame Republicans, conservatives, and me," meaning the president, "for the division and hatred that has been going on for so long in our country. Actually, it is their fake and dishonest reporting which is causing problems far greater than they understand."
Well, I would say what I have said publicly all the time around here. I can speak for Howard Fineman, whom I've known for 35 years, and for my paper, and for the Wall Street Journal, where I used to work, and the New York Times, where I used to work, and the Boston Globe, where I used to work, but especially for the Post-Gazette. I have never, as editor of this paper, witnessed, countenanced, or seen any paragraph, any sentence, any word, any syllable that was knowingly put in the paper incorrectly. Not once.
Yeah. And I would also say that for my home station here, WBUR, as well. I'd throw that in there as well. We've got 2 minutes here left. Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, these are conversations which I don't necessarily know how to bring to an appropriate close in the course of the hour that we have, because, of course, it's bigger than an hour. It's bigger than a day. It's bigger than a week or a month or a year. This is something that we all need to be grappling with for probably generations. But your last thought that you want to leave listeners with today, as we also think about memorial services that will be going on for all the victims at Tree of Life as well.
In Judaism, often when someone dies, we say, "May their memory be for a blessing." And I believe it is our sacred obligation now to do work to bring that blessing into the world. If this atrocity took place and we do nothing, we are not honoring their memory. We need to fight white supremacy. We need to fight hatred and bigotry on all sides. We need to work to create leadership that is going to work for an America that protects all people. We need to get leadership in power that is going to create common sense gun laws. And we need to, all of us, do everything we can to make a space where this country is one that is safe for people of all racial backgrounds, all religions, all national identities, everything.
Yeah. And, you know, last thought, actually, I'm going to give to one of our listeners. We've received multiple comments, people correcting me, and I have to say I'm very grateful for listeners for this correction, because I had said earlier this hour that the victims in the Kroger shooting were two men. That is wrong. It was a man and a woman. Their names were Maurice Stollard and Vicki Lee Jones. And listeners are rightly reminding us that they were equally innocent victims of pure hatred who deserve to be remembered accurately. So thank you very much, listeners, for being so keen and for listening with integrity and helping us conduct this hour with integrity as well. I'd like to thank David Tribman, executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Howard Fineman, NBC News analyst and journalism lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania, and Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, rabbi in residence at Avodah, an organization that trains Jewish social justice leaders. Thank you all so much for this conversation today. And listeners, go to onpointradio.org and keep letting us know what you think. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.